you to the sixth case of the day, United States versus Scott. Mr. Oliver.
Judges of the Seventh Circuit, counsel, may it please the court, as your honors will remember from the briefs, this is a case involving the legality of the search of a defendant's automobile. At issue, it is our contention that the district court erred in denying the defendant's motion to suppress physical evidence as there was no probable cause to search the defendant's vehicle. Probable cause exists if the totality of the circumstances, based on the totality of the circumstances, if there is a fair probability that contraband will be found in a particular place at a particular time. The totality of the circumstances in the instant case did not make it more probable that the defendant's auto contained contraband at the time it was searched. Therefore, the money in the glove compartment and the narcotics in the trunk should be suppressed, based on the rule articulated in Mapp v. Ohio. The facts or evidence relevant to this case, Your Honors, is the following. On October 21st of 04, the government overheard, through wiretaps, defendant Scott and an individual named Walker stating the following, that they had a bunch of stuff, that there may be a way to make it beautiful, they might make a trip to a lab, and they might put it together in the morning. That talk is ambiguous at best. The following day, on October 22nd, all that was said between the two was something like, I'm ready to do that. You said you got that thing. I got one. Then subsequently, Scott drove to Walker's house in Markham, Illinois, which the government observed. Scott arrived at Walker's house, entered, and later exited. Scott was then stopped subsequently at approximately 2:06 p.m. as he was walking to a sandwich shop. Officers brought him back to his car, searched the glove compartment, found $7,400, searched the trunk, and found a kilo of cocaine in the trunk. If probable cause existed, it had to be premised on the phone calls on 10/21 and 10/22, combined with the observations of the police officers on 10/22. It is our contention that neither the phone calls, nor the surveillance, nor any combination thereof, made it more probable that Mr. Scott, the defendant in this case, had drugs in his vehicle on 10/22 at approximately 2:06 p.m. The only logical inference that can be drawn from the phone conversation on 10/21 is that somewhere, at some time, Mr. Scott possessed something that they wanted to make more beautiful or more potent. Based on this, it is our contention that the officers did not have enough cause or support to stop Mr. Scott, on the 22nd of October. All that they had agreed to do on the 22nd was that thing. Nothing on the 22nd.
Yes, Your Honor. Building or whatever, what would the phone conversations at least allow the officers to think is going on?
To do that thing? It could be anything.
So it could be to not anything related to drugs, I guess you're saying.
Your Honor, I mean, of course it could be something related to drugs, but probable cause is a standard, and the facts have to meet that standard. They could be doing that thing, repairing an automobile, or fixing a stereo, or hooking up electronics, or any innumerable amount of things, not just narcotics. It is our contention that that thing, it may be suspicious activity, but it does not rise to the level of probable cause, which is not a standard fixed in stone, I understand. But it is a legal standard, and it does matter. And it, based on the evidence, it has to be more probable than not that a crime has been committed, is about to be committed, or was committed in the past. And it is our contention, based on doing that thing, that doesn't rise to the standard. And their observations were simply one person traveling to another person's house. That's it. Moving along, is our contention on the 22nd that these facts did not make it more probable that Mr. Scott possessed marijuana? Probable cause is not a hunch or guesswork. It is not speculation or conjecture. It is articulable facts that make it more probable than not that a crime has been committed or is about to be committed. Wherefore, Your Honors, based on the fact that probable cause did not exist to search Mr. Scott's vehicle, we would ask that you hold that the search was violative of the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, and we ask for the case to be remanded back to the District Court.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
May it please the Court, the judgment of the District Court should be affirmed. The District Court was correct in concluding that the agents on October 22nd had probable cause to search the vehicle driven by Mr. Scott. My opponent suggests that probable cause is defined by being more probable than not. I don't believe that's the correct legal standard. The question is whether the agents on that day, under the facts known to them at the time, were reasonable in concluding that there was a fair probability that contraband or evidence of contraband would be found in the vehicle. Under the facts that they knew, there certainly was reason to believe that they had a fair probability of finding contraband. They had been intercepting conversations in which Mr. Scott had been talking to Walker for some 2 or 3 days prior to the 22nd of October. Those conversations make clear that on October 22nd, there were two drug deals that were contemplated to take place between Scott and Walker. The first drug deal was discussed for the first time on October 19th, a drug deal in which Scott would obtain from Walker something that he wanted to make sure would be, quote, beautiful, unquote. The second drug deal was the deal involving the marijuana, which was discussed on October 21st, in which Scott would provide marijuana that he hoped Walker would be able to rejuvenate. Both of those deals were discussed again on October 22nd, the day of the search, when, as arranged on the 21st, Scott and Walker arranged to meet. And again on the 22nd, there was reference back to the deal discussed for the first time on the 19th, because Scott told Walker that he was ready to do that, you know, the thing, referring back to the deal in which Walker would provide Scott with drugs. And Walker confirmed on the 22nd that, yes, I have one. I got one. That is a reference to a drug deal which the agents reasonably understood to be separate and apart from the marijuana transaction. So having intercepted these calls in which Scott and Walker were discussing two distinct drug transactions, having observed Scott and Walker meet for over an hour at Walker's house, and then having stopped Scott within 20 minutes of him leaving Walker's house, the agents certainly had probable cause to believe that they would find contraband in his car on that day.
Mr. Fullerton, under your theory of the case, is it possible, would it have been reasonable for the officers to have believed that Mr. Scott still had the marijuana, either because he had showed it to the other guy and the other fellow had said, I cannot do anything with this, or because had showed it to the other fellow and it was being taken somewhere else for this processing?
Yes, Your Honor. Those are two distinct possibilities involving the marijuana. The marijuana, as you rightly point out, was going to be transported by Scott to Walker for him to look at. Walker insisted on looking at it. And then Walker, one of the possibilities that Walker said was that if I'm able to do something, we're going to have to take it to the lab. Where that was or what it was is unclear, but it was that possibility contemplated somebody having to transport that marijuana from Walker, from that meeting between Scott and Walker, to another place. So under both of those scenarios, the officers could reasonably believe that that Scott would have the marijuana in his possession after the meeting with Walker. That's correct. Anyway, in summary, we'd ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fullerton. Mr. Oliver?
Your Honor, the defense or the plaintiff's appellant would ask that you look to the actual transcripts and to the words that were spoken. Moreover, we'd also ask that you look to docket number 42, which is the defendant's sentencing memorandum. The government tried to pin an additional 2 kilos transaction on my client and also tried to pin a possible 3 to 5 kilo transaction on my client based on similar communications. Judge Zegel found that not to be credible and didn't count that evidence at sentencing. Government was seeking approximately 150 months. Mr. Scott received 48 months because the evidence simply did not support the contention that he was responsible for those transactions. Similarly, in this case, is our contention that the evidence doesn't support the probable cause that the officers used to search the defendant's automobile, namely 2 days' worth of phone conversations, which were just 2 or 3 conversations, and simple observations of Mr. Scott going to Mr. Walker's house. The officers never observed Mr. Scott going into his trunk or anything, which is where they recovered the kilo of cocaine from. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. Thank you, Mr. Fullerton. The case is taken under advisement.